So is my microphone? Oh, my microphone is on. That's quite loud. Very official, too. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for being here to learn about the Enneagram as a tool for spiritual growth. So I'd love to hear just a little bit about who's here and who's heard of this already. So would you raise your hand if you've ever heard of the Enneagram before today? Okay, two people, okay. And those that are familiar, do you know your type? Yes. Oh, three. Okay. Great. So normally when I teach an Enneagram class, I take 8 hours to do it. We have 45 minutes today. So I'm going to do just a brief overview of how we use the Enneagram, what the Enneagram is, how we use it for spiritual growth, and we'll start getting into the types just a little bit. But just to, I guess, introduce myself to you all, my name's Jan Shegda, and I've been going here to FPCH for a year or more. And I've been with Clarity Coaching for the last 10 years. I specialize in understanding your personality and how it relates to your career goals, career and spiritual development. I did my grad work at Wheaton College, where I did a psychology degree as well as spiritual formation at the master's level. And then I also work with the International Enneagram Association, which is kind of the governing body of all the different Enneagram schools and teachers. I'm currently their conference chair, which our conference is next month. We have 40 different speakers from around the world coming. And then I'll be turning that over, and I'll be president next year, so which I think is actually going to be less work. I'm kind of excited about that. I live here in Hollywood and married to Alex, and I guess that's kind of me. So, all right. Let's talk about the Enneagram. So first, let's see, is my clicker working? Yeah. So this is a picture of the Enneagram, if I can go back. Yeah, I guess there's a delay. So Enneagram, the word just means nine-sided figure. And so you can see here, just, you know, as a geometric figure, there's 9 points on this diagram. And it's a tool that's been used, depending on who you listen to, for thousands of years. Some people take it back all the way to Plato, which I think is a little bit of a stretch, but it certainly has been used in the major monotheistic religions for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and usually the more mystical branches of those. So mystical Christianity through Catholicism, mystical Judaism through like the Kabbalah, and then mystical Islam, which is more like through the Sufi track. So why use it for spiritual growth? So essentially the Enneagram is a model of understanding our personality. And the reason it's helpful is, first of all, it's inherently a spiritual model. It talks about who we are as people and how we want to connect to God as well as the deeper parts of ourselves. So that, for just to start out from there, that makes it helpful. It's also deeper than a lot of, I don't know, quizzes you would take online or something like the Myers-Briggs, which will tell you, here's what your type and how you'll always behave. The Enneagram is a health model, so it says, this is the gift that you have to offer the world, and when that gets exaggerated, the downside comes through, and when it's positive, you see the upside. The reason that I think it's really helpful, especially for spiritual development, is the idea of good advice, bad advice. So, for example, one of the Enneagram types is a 2. And there's descriptions of them, general descriptions in your handout, too, if it's helpful for you to follow along. There also was a quiz, but when I arrived this morning, the handout only had a quiz for types 5 through 9. So I think those are the ones we'll talk about today. So if you're a 1, 2, 3, or 4, you might be out of luck until next week. I'll get you a new quiz. But so Enneagram Type 2, their personality is centered around understanding the needs of others and how to be helpful and connected to others by understanding those needs. So in some situations, it might be really great spiritual advice to advise someone to think about the needs of others before their own, be more giving and selfless, model Christ-like behavior in that way. However, if you were to give that advice to a two, it's actually very destructive because that's already something that they overdo and neglect other parts of their own development. So the Enneagram helps us understand what's natural for us, what perhaps we're overusing, and maybe those areas of our spiritual development that we've neglected. So I might just pause here because we had a couple of other people come in a minute ago. So what questions come up for you so far, if any, about the roots of the Enneagram, what the Enneagram is, how it's used? No? We're good? Or maybe so confused that don't even have questions. Yeah. Yeah, it's more of a new development in evangelical Christianity, especially because many of the writers who use the Enneagram in the Christian world were coming from more of a Catholic perspective, and so Protestants and evangelicals hadn't been as comfortable with the language that they used. There have been a few books published in the last 3 years from more of an evangelical perspective, such as The Road Back to You and The Sacred Enneagram, and because of that, Protestants are more comfortable now. There has been, unfortunately, some drama around the Enneagram with Christianity because some people get very triggered by the actual diagram, if I go back, and think it looks like a pentagram or that there's some kind of, you know, witchcraft involved or anything. There's not. But to answer your question, yes, there's definitely a resurgence, particularly in the evangelical or Protestant Christian expressions of the Enneagram now, happening now. Yeah. Other thoughts or questions before we get into the types? Yeah, so there's been some discussion about that. And I think what most teachers would say is that we didn't decide that there were 9 types. Those are just the number of types that exist. There's actually a kind of a interesting research study done with midwives who worked in hospitals with delivery of babies, and they were able to identify 9 distinct personality patterns at the moment of birth, which they had no knowledge of the Enneagram or anything, but those 9 types mapped onto the 9 types of the Enneagram. So, yeah, to answer your question, there's not like there was one person that decided, okay, we're going to create 9 of these. They just observed that number, I guess, in the world, 9 different patterns. Other thoughts or questions? Okay, so let's talk about the types generally. Oh, I should probably say this first. So we're going to start by talking about what each type's characteristic passion or characteristic sin is, which is kind of where you tend to get triggered or stuck the most. And the reason these are important, particularly for spiritual growth, is whatever you do with yourself and with others, you tend to also bring that into your relationship with God. So a relationship is a relationship is a relationship. The way that you treat yourself, the way that you treat others, the way that you treat God tend to be pretty consistent. And if there's an area that you're avoiding, which generally whatever our characteristic passion is something we are avoiding, that creates a weakness, then you become anxious around engaging it and creates a blind spot, etc. So these are the 9 Enneagram passions, they're called, are also called blind spots or characteristic sins, depending which writer you're reading. And they generally correlate to the 7 deadly sins with a couple extras thrown in for good measure. So what we're going to be talking about today is basically how to understand kind of where you're landing on this map, and then what spiritual disciplines will help you kind of move away from that.
though, if you don't know your Enneagram type and want just kind of a quick overall understanding of the ones we'll be talking about today, there is a quiz, half of a quiz, in your handout. So, which covers style 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, which are the ones we'll talk about today. So if you want to get just kind of an overview of whether you might be those types, that can help you. If you want to take an actually like scientifically validated Enneagram test, the best one and the only one that's a psychometric instrument, classified as a psychometric instrument, is called the WEPSS, which W-E-P-S-S, which is down at the bottom here. You can just go to WEPSS.com and it's $10. The free ones, you kind of get what you pay for. They're, I think the test retest reliability on them is 40-something percent, so that's not great. Okay. Let's start by seeing where we're going, what we're hopefully wanting to get to. So if this is where we're starting and kind of where we get stuck, here's the different spiritual disciplines that will help us kind of move out of that space for each of the types. And then eventually the gifts of the spirit and, oh, there's really a delay on this, the virtues. And each of these are also included in the description of the nine types in here. So let's start with type five. So anyone who knows their Enneagram type or knows of the Enneagram, is anyone in here, do you know that you're five? This is not the type to be starting with to try to get audience participation anyway, actually. If you do know the Enneagram, it would be like hiding in the corner, like, why are you calling on me? So fives are the, there some names for the five are the investigator, the wise person, the specialist, the expert. And their personality centers around understanding and knowing mentally in a deep way. So because of that, they tend to, in a social role, take more of an observer role. They want to observe and see rather than be known themselves, generally. So because of that, that can kind of create some isolation from, like, spiritual community, basically. So the spiritual discipline for fives is fellowship, or getting more connected to other people and groups in terms of their spiritual development versus doing it all mentally or all alone on their own. So fives are, the passion for the five is called avarice, which is just kind of an old-time word for greed. So, and greed can sometimes be misunderstood. So some people think that greed is wanting more and more and more of something. That's actually gluttony. Greed is sharing less, less, less. So less of my time, less of my money, less of my emotions, less of my words, in some cases, less of my physical space. So the more stressed fives become, the more they kind of like turn inward and start to tiptoe out of the room, metaphorically or whatever is happening with them. So the virtue that's created for fives, if they engage in the spiritual discipline of fellowship, is they begin to develop trust in themselves to be in the world and be at peace, and trust in their fellow man. Thoughts or questions about what it means to be a five, or how the spiritual development comes in for fives? Does this sound like anyone you know? Married to, friends with, rooming with?
Well, does thinking have to involve withdrawal? I think of myself as a curious person. Observes, reads, learns new things, but I don't withdraw from situations.
Yeah.
It has to be observed.
Right. Yeah. This is the kind of thinking that is the more like gathering my books and going to the cave. Kind of thinking, but you're right. It doesn't have to be there that way. And I think the challenge for the five is to learn by doing and kind of being in the moment, they would be the type most prone to learn how to dance by reading a book versus, you know, kind of getting out there. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. No, thinking does not have to be a withdrawal, but that's how it generally shows up here. Yeah. Is there a question over here? Yeah. Not exactly. It's not quite that linear. It's more fives, because it's so important for them to have all the information, be prepared. They're not kind of like an in the moment, like trust my body, trust the other person in front of me, trust that life will give me what I need kind of thing. And so that's kind of the element that's created over time. Yeah, and that's really their strength, is they perceive things really quickly. They tend to get kind of an overview much faster than the rest of us would, and at a deeper level. Why is it a virtue to trust? That's an interesting question. I think, you know, it comes back to the kind of the principles of, if we think about a relationship with God, being able to surrender, to not have to be in control, to let go and let God, let's say. Yeah, those would be, yeah. You had a question?
Yeah, I did. I was a little confused. I just got to
relate. Okay.
So I had, it seems to be five, and two different fives I'm talking about. So what five are we talking about now? We're out here in fellowship. Can we move on from that?
So there's one five. And we were talking about basically the three stages. So if you start back here, oops, yeah. So where should I be pointing this? So fives start with avarice, which is the sense that I have to hold on to what I've got. I don't have enough. And yeah, so they start here with avarice, and then the spiritual discipline for five is fellowship, which then can over time develop the virtue of trust. Does that make sense? And then it's written also in your handout for the summary of each. Yeah. Other thoughts, questions about fives? We'll go on to sixes. So sixes. So some names for sixes: the loyalist, the loyal questioner, the trooper, the questioner. I think I said that already. The loyal person. So the six personality structure is also a mental type, but whereas the five is about kind of doing a deep dive, sixes are about understanding all the pros and cons, getting kind of like a wide view of the landscape with a particular view for avoiding anything that might be risky or unsafe. And different sixes are attuned to different kinds of danger, let's say. But at their best, sixes are kind of the foundation of a company, of a family, of a community. They're just like their name, very loyal, very consistent. You kind of know what you're going to get with them. And they tend to be the ones that stick around and are committed when the going gets tough. So they're, so you've heard talk, of course, about having a conscience, like kind of an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other. It's said that sixes have more like a roundtable committee of voices that are advising them at any given time. So if you can imagine 15 voices inside your mind advising you on every decision you make, that could create a little fear or anxiety, which is the passion for the six. Essentially, that comes from them not having a very well-developed trust in themselves. They're looking for an authority outside of themselves to kind of help them. So The discipline for the six is sacrifice, which essentially is putting yourself into a state of anxiety or fear or not knowing what's going to happen next, which is something, of course, most sixes would avoid because it's very uncomfortable. But as they're able to do that, then they're able to develop the virtue of confidence, confidence in myself, confidence in God to take care of me. One way this shows up a lot in faith communities, working with sixes, is with things like sacrificial giving. Or I worked with one six recently who their way of engaging the discipline of sacrifice was to take a leadership position where they had to get up and speak in front of people, which was kind of their biggest fear. So essentially, the spiritual discipline for six comes down to pushing into those places that make them feel very not secure or not safe. Within reason, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, walk down a dark alley alone at night, but yeah, things that you would normally avoid. Anyone in the room identify as a six that you know of? No? Yeah, maybe? Maybe? Yeah.
Loyalty have to involve
insecurity?
No.
No. So a word about that also. Any type can be loyal, you know. So it's not like sixes have the corner on loyalty or twos are the only people that are helpful. It's just something that is a core of how they are. Yeah. And essentially, each of the Enneagram types tries to create and give to others what they want most for themselves. Sixes create safety, security, and consistency because that's what they want most from other people. And we all do that in one way or another. Questions about sixes. They can be tricky because I heard a teacher say one time that you know if you're a six if you can say one thing, but the opposite is also true, because they're kind of always doing this balancing act of playing devil's advocate or looking at the pros and cons of everything and trying to be well-rounded people. What thoughts or questions come up about sixes for anyone?
I've also heard that sixes can be kind of described as a skeptic.
Yes.
Very skeptical about the world and about other people and situations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great thought. Yep. And if you think about, basically, so a six is someone that wants to be committed to something, wants to be loyal, wants to be able to give that gift, but like most of us, they've been burned a few times by doing that or offering that loyalty too soon. So they tend to have kind of like a longer testing process than most people. But then once you kind of do get in the good graces, pretty loyal for life. Yeah. But skeptic's a good word. It's usually the first response, whether it's, you know, relationally or a work project, or it's kind of looking for where are the holes. Other thoughts or questions about sixes? Okay, so let's talk about sevens. So sevens are the names for the seven are the enthusiast, the epicure, the Renaissance person, the adventurer, and their type structure is about finding silver linings. If we're talking about mental style, so five, sixes, and sevens are the three primarily mental types. We call them that they're in the head center. And so we talk about the fives, who's kind of more like the researcher, expert type mental style. Sixes are more pros and cons, cover all the bases, understand where everything comes from, make sure it's safe. And sevens have more of a brainstorming mental style. So they're always thinking about what could be possible, what's next, what's exciting, what's positive, what's around the corner. Very quick thinking, usually pretty quick on their feet, usually pretty extroverted. And their spiritual passion is gluttony, which is the idea that there's no such thing as too much. So never too much fun, never too much, I don't know, excitement. I've known many sevens who, I don't know why this is coming to mind, but even like when they're on their calendar, they might have three things scheduled for every day, just, and they actually believe they can go, like in the evening, they can actually make it to all three of these events, and sometimes they do, but a lot of times it's, you know, about keeping your options open or going somewhere and seeing if it's fun and then maybe changing if you need to something else. The discipline for sevens is fasting, which doesn't necessarily have to, I mean, gluttony and fasting sounds like it's about food, but it's not necessarily just about that. It could be, you know, overindulgence in social activity, for example, or overindulgence in, I don't know, one of your pastimes. And fasting is the idea that, you know, no, I have enough, I need no more, which is kind of the opposite of where seven tends to go. And then over time, the virtue that comes from seven is groundedness. They can, in kind of the average range, they can seem like they're kind of all over the place, in kind of an exciting, almost like butterfly type way. And so over time, with more spiritual development, they have more kind of like this centered groundedness to them. So anyone in here think they might be a seven? Yeah.
I go back and forth between 4 and 7. I know our usually
miss easily. Yeah, okay. Back and forth between 4 and 7.
Yeah, because recently I found myself to be a lot more extroverted than I thought.
Oh.
And I'm making a lot of plans and trying to get to all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like between the hours of 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I only go to 1.
Yeah.
And I lament the fact that I couldn't go to the other 2.
Mm, lament is a good word.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. I don't know. Mm. But I also don't know if my spiritual passion is glut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Well, that is that was the way that I was taught to. There's many ways you can go about trying to identify your Enneagram type. The one that the guy I learned from primarily is a guy named Jerry Wagner out of Loyola in Chicago, said that, you know, basically whatever your passion is, the one that you know where you notice you get stuck the most, that's probably your type. So, thoughts or questions on sevens?
If type 5 and type 7 have to be in close proximity, like marriage or friendship, they would drive each other nuts.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting. I know a lot of 5s and 7s that have married each other, which you would think is kind of, that yeah, get married. Or 5s, I've seen a lot of 5s with 7s or 2s. Which are, 2 is opposite in the other way, which is about, like, you know, being really emotionally connected and help doing a lot of helping behaviors, and that's also something that isn't as characteristic of 5. But, yeah, I mean, so it can seem really opposite, but also they each have what the other needs to learn in a way, so it can be really formative that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we should, it'd probably be a good time to remind all of ourselves that these are patterns, and one pattern doesn't necessarily define any of us. But it's more kind of where you, when you do get stuck, where does that show up for you? And it tends to be in a recurring place. Thoughts or questions on 7 we haven't covered? Okay, so let's move next to the gut center. So we talked about the three head center types, 5, 6, and 7. And then the gut center. So this is body intelligence, starting with type 8, the challenger. So other names for the 8. And when I'm saying other names, I should mention the Enneagram doesn't belong to anybody. It's not like some other personality systems where someone's created it and then branded it. It's actually considered to be something recurring in nature that no one can trademark or own. So every different school kind of puts a different spin on how to talk about the types, what the names of them are, which can be confusing if you're just starting to learn. So just be aware of that if you do some Googling and see that everyone's saying something a little bit different, because it's also they're creating their school and kind of their intellectual property around that. So names for the 8, the challenger, the boss, those are the ones that are coming to mind right this second. 8s are about power and the appropriate use of power. So they want to make sure the right people have it and the wrong people don't. So that can sometimes show up with them having the power, because who better to have it than me? I'll make sure it's used right. And also can show up with them kind of having a mentality of challenging authority, if they see them as being unjust or incompetent. Their spiritual passion is lust, which we typically think of in a sexual context, but that's not what it means here necessarily. It's more just the way that the 8 type structure is about putting on more strength, more power, more intensity in many cases, and feeling uncomfortable with anything that's soft or vulnerable about you. So if you put on more strength and kind of reduce anything that's soft and vulnerable, it can kind of create this emptiness, because you're repressing an entire part of yourself. And then that's where lust comes in, to kind of fill that vacuum with experiences. So a couple examples of this: you could have a lustful experience with a cup of coffee if you're drinking the coffee just to extract the charge from it. You can have a lustful experience at work if you're seeing other people as just stepping stones to your success versus as actual people with needs and wants, etc. So the discipline for 8s, they really don't like it when I say this, but it's submission. So the act of putting yourself under someone else's power or control and releasing that control yourself. The virtue that comes from taking a submissive posture is magnanimity, which I always have trouble pronouncing, which basically is the spirit of generosity and strength without having to prove anything to anybody. Being able to be strong and grounded within yourself without having to have control in all aspects. Anyone here think they might be an 8? Yes? Did I see you chuckling about the coffee thing?
I just thought you could say wine.
Wine? Yes. Anything... Would you be willing to share anything that's especially true for you, or what comes up for you around this?
Beth and I work together. I was looking at her earlier, describing what this is, and she's nodding, and I'm
yeah.
As a control person, I'm uncomfortable in discussing this.
Yes. Well, moving on. Yeah, it can be, and it also, can put you in kind of a vulnerable place to see yourself in one of these types and like, oh wow, that's all one thing. I thought that was 10 different things that I was doing. It's actually just all about the need for power, all about the need for exploration and fun if you're a 7, or the need for security if you're a 6. So, yeah. Which in that way, that's why I really like using the Enneagram as a tool for spiritual development, because depending, who you read or who you listen to or what sermon you go to. There'll be any number of different lists of things that you should be paying attention to and all the different ways that you should be developing yourself spiritually. And the Enneagram can help you nail down what's really the one main thing that if I don't pay attention to this, it all comes crumbling down, so I should make sure I do that at least. So that can be really helpful. Questions about eights, kind of what makes them tick, or, yeah.
Yeah, all of these, in fact, I think hopefully we all started out, we are Christian, hopefully we were led by the Spirit, and that kind of makes this more or less clear to us, but I think it does probably apply to those who are not led by the Spirit, much more so. We still have those tendencies due to our flesh nature,
Yeah, so, and to your point, again, the Enneagram is a health model, so in theory, the healthier you are, the less of these behaviors show up because, you know, you're connected to spirit, you're not in that sin nature, and you're not seeing kind of the downside. Yeah, so another teacher I've listened to, you know, talks about how if you're really easily identifiable as any of these nine types right away, that's probably not a great thing because that probably means that you're really kind of in the trance of whatever your passion is. So, other questions or thoughts about eights? Anyone here live with an eight or? That you know, I've worked with an eight. Cool. Okay, so let's talk about nines, and then I think that's probably all we'll have time for today. And we'll do the other types when we come back next week. So type nine, also a body type, the peacemaker, other names for the nine, the harmonizer, although usually peaceful person or peacemaking are in most of the type descriptions because it's so much about what nines are about. In some ways, they're kind of the opposite energy of the eight. Eight is kind of the more outward, assertive energy, and nines tend to be more passive, more reflective, more responsive. So they essentially, so if sixes are more like the foundation or the bedrock of a group or family. Nines are kind of the glue in between individual people. They smooth out differences, and they do that by making themselves and their own needs less of a big deal. So this would be the person that you ask them what they want to have for dinner, and you say, I don't know. Whatever you want is fine. Would you like Mexican? Oh, yeah, Mexican sounds good. How about Chinese? Oh, yeah, that sounds good. Mexican or Chinese. Like, just kind of, even with little things, don't necessarily have to state a preference. Which is great in some situations and really helpful. But if that gets exaggerated, their spiritual passion is sloth, which typically is described as laziness, but really more what it means is being inattentive to yourself in one way or another. And not in all ways, but nines usually have one area, at least, where they just kind of fall asleep to themselves. It might be in their career development, it might be in their relationships, it might be their spiritual growth, but whatever it is, they just kind of don't want to look at that thing. The discipline for nines is study, not necessarily, you know, in the very literal, like, get into the Bible, study the Bible more, although that could be an expression of it, but basically trying a little harder, like putting a little more, stepping on the gas 10 or 20% more. Exerting yourself a little bit more. Nines can be very effective, very productive and efficient people, but it's often, they often focus on doing everything but that one thing that really should be done right then. And the virtue is vitality, which is, so if nines on the negative side tend to be kind of disconnected from themselves, disconnected from the world. The virtue of vitality means that they're very grounded, very here in the moment, in the here and now. thoughts or questions on nines? And do we have any nines in the room, do we think? Yeah? Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Any questions on nines? Yes. Yes, you would get 10 different answers on that, depending what teacher you listen to. But probably the most popular theory is that those connections can show you ways of the different numbers that you're most closely connected to, and they're called the arrows of integration and disintegration. So, for example, 2 is connected to 8 and 4, and the theory is that if 2s get real stressed out and frustrated, they might take on the negative side of 8, and when they're growing and healthy, they take on the positive sides of 4. So that's one of the more popular theories. But it can get kind of confusing. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because, again, personality, you know, it's the prison we put ourselves in. Personality really isn't a great thing. It helps us survive our world. It helps us make sense of, you know, how to grow up, how to do our work, how to survive in the world when we're older. But we learn about it so we can release it, not so we can be more of that thing. Yes.
If people are having a hard time identifying themselves, would you say it would be helpful for them to think about what they were like in their early 20s?
Yeah, that's one way. Yeah, people talk about trying to make that easier. And also, there's just certain types that it's a little bit longer journey for you. I mean, 6s, like 9s, we were just talking about 9s, who their entire type structure is focused around not being a big deal. You know, understanding what I think, what I want, and who I am, those are questions that's going to take me most of my life to answer if I'm a 9, for most of the time. So, yeah, definitely thinking about when you're younger, you can take a test. There's all sorts of resources which are listed in here, books you can read. And for some people, it is more of a process, and that's fine. Yeah. So we have just a couple minutes left. So questions on, yep, mm-hmm. Yes, and what that speaks to is that, yes, you have a main type, but actually your Enneagram, there's more to your Enneagram personality profile than just what type you are. There's also something called a wing, there's something called an instinctual variant, there's something called tri-type, So I've been studying the Enneagram for 15 years, and there's always something new to learn. It can get pretty involved, but to your point, none of us, there's one main place where we kind of land on this map, but that doesn't mean that we don't have any of the qualities of the others. And usually there's 3 or 4 that are pretty strong within us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. It definitely lasts lifelong. I mean, when we talk about like the virtue here for each of the types, it's a job that will take your whole life to achieve, really, because it's that thing that's the hardest for you. Yeah.
Could you repeat the question? We only heard your answer.
Oh, sure. So it was actually more of a comment saying that, you know, if midwives can identify the 9 personality patterns at the moment of birth, that's really strong within you, and it would take a lot of energy to overcome any of the negative sides of this pattern. So, yeah. So it's 9:44, so I'm going to close here, but I'll stick around for questions if anybody has them. I'm going to see if there's anything. I wanted to let you know about the resources page in here. So if you want to learn more online or elsewhere. And next week, we'll be here back again and go through the other types that we didn't do. So 1, 2, 3, and 4. So thanks for being here.